Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on affiliates for details. Today we have a great show for you. So greetings and salutations to everyone. Hello to all my listeners in Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and the Americas. It is great to be alive. According to today, it is May 22nd, and yep, we dodged another bullet. That's right, the end of the world was yesterday. And man, did a lot happen leading up to Doomsday. And we're going to talk about all of them. Cornell's West feud with the president. Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child. The former leader of the IMF. Newt Gingrich. Donald Trump. Tim Pawlenty. Herman Cain. And much, much more. And I would love to get your comments on these and all of these issues. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and families and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button. Or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, Judgment Day, as I mentioned in the opening, was May 21st. Now, there had to be a number of times someone has predicted the end of the world. The latest prediction came from Harold Camping, 89. The California evangelical broadcaster who predicts that Judgment Day was to come on May 21st, 2011. Okay, let's be honest. The Bible says in Matthew 25 and 13, "Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." So since he has a Bible, he's an evangelical broadcaster, one would think he should at least be familiar with this passage. However, I had to admit, right or wrong, there was some cause to be alarmed, if not intrigued by all the developments over the past year. I wouldn't go so far to say the end of the world was coming, but I would say something was going on. Here's what I mean. Recall the reports of the unusual blackbirds in the southern United States earlier this year. There were multiple reports of mass birds and fish deaths from around the globe, prompting some to theorize that there may be signs of the end times. Moreover, recall there was a UFO sighting that was videotaped by several news sources. What about the new life that was found by NASA in the form of a bacteria called GFAJ-1? That's Golf Foxtrot Alpha Juliet-1. Look it up. It was said to be unlike anything currently living in planet Earth. To fuel the conspiracy even more, a rare planetary alignment that was visible from Earth during the days preceding May 21st. That's right. Mercury, Venus, Jupiter, and Mars were visible in the early morning sky, aligned roughly along the ecliptic, or what they may call the path that the sun travels throughout the day. Uranus and Neptune, which were much fainter, were all the same, would have been visible through binoculars. Now, although Campion was out of his mind, there was some cause to take a second look. And in fact, not to belabor this issue any further, but there were some people trying to justify all of this craziness, and they were using the Bible as a mean of proof. Let me tell you what I mean. It turns out the theory comes down to two numerological proofs. The first proof is based on Genesis 7 and 4. When God said to Noah, 7 days from now I will send rain on earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made. When God referred to 7 days, he meant both 7 days and 7,000 years, because one day with the Lord is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. And I quote. The flood occurred approximately 4990 BC, 7,000 years later is 2011. Okay, here's what they said the second proof was. The second proof looks at the significance of the numbers and the days between the crucifixion and May 21st. According to these evangelicals, there are 722,500 days between these dates. 722,500 is a significant number because it is composed of a significant numbers. Five signifies redemption. 10 signifies completion. And 17 signifies heaven. The numbers represent the day of redemption and the end of Christian era, which is 10, and the ascent to heaven, 17. And these factors are double for added significance. It looks like somebody forgot to carry one when they was doing this math. Nevertheless, our next opportunity looks like to get it right. It's October the 11th, 2011. Or, if that doesn't happen, 21st of December in 2012. According to the Mayan calendar, it's supposed to be doomsday again. So, we missed this opportunity. We got a couple more chances coming up. So just hold on to your horses. And another story I want to talk about a little bit is about Dominique Strauss-Kahn. I don't know if you heard this or not, but there was an apartment building that rejected Strauss-Kahn's for house arrest. First, let me tell you the backstory. Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the head of the International Monetary Fund, which is the IMF, was arrested this weekend, last weekend, for allegedly sexually assaulting a maid in his hotel room. Now, later during the week, he resigned. In a statement released by the IMF in the early hours of Thursday morning, Mr. Strauss-Kahn said he needed to devote all his strength, all his time, and all his energy to proving his innocence. Now, the 62-year-old Frenchman has been under intense pressure since being arrested in the first-class cabin of an Air France jet on the tarmac of John F. Kennedy Airport on Saturday afternoon. He also faced new claims that he hired prostitutes from the Manhattan Madam, same person who served Elliot Spitzer, the disgraced former governor of New York. He is being held at Rikers Island Prison after being formally charged with seven crimes related to the alleged assault of the 32-year-old Ginmaid in his suite at the hotel earlier during that day, including attempted rape and an illegal sexual act. Later still, he posted $1 million bail a day after a New York judge said he could be released under 24-hour supervision and confinement. But he remained in custody well into the afternoon after his original living arrangement fell through. The complications with Strauss-Kahn's release from Rikers Island Jail arose when managers at the building where his wife, Anna Sinclair, had planned to rent an apartment for her and her husband, reportedly backed out of the agreement. Now, the luxury apartment building at 2010 East 65th Street sits on Manhattan's Tony Upper East Side. In anticipation of Strauss-Kahn's release, reporters and television crews had swarmed the building, where some residents had complained that the former IMS chief present would cause unwanted attention. I don't know about you. I thought we were in a country where you were innocent until proven guilty, but I don't know. I tell you, I don't know why they're treating him like this, but it's very, very strange to me. In other news, Arnold Schwarzenegger got in a pretty big situation here. I think a couple of weeks ago, him and his wife split. She filed for a divorce, so they was going to go their separate ways. But it turns out it was a big, big reason behind that. Evidently, Mildred Patrice Benner, a 50-year-old lady, has been identified as the mother of Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child. This is what Radio Online reported last week. Now, Benner, which she also goes by the name of Patty, was a housekeeper for the Schwarzenegger family for 20 years before retiring in January. Now, according to TMZ, the former housekeeper, who lives several hours outside of Los Angeles with Schwarzenegger's son and her three other children, began to pursue Arnold in the late 1990s. She reportedly told friends that she and Schwarzenegger had unprotected sex during the day at his house, though she didn't tell him that he was the father of her child until the boy was a toddler. Now, Schwarzenegger announced Monday night that he had fathered a child with a household staffer over a decade ago, before he was elected as California governor. And after leaving the governor's office, this is what he said. "I told my wife about this event, which occurred over a decade ago," he said in a statement issued to the Los Angeles Times. He goes on to say, "I understand and deserve the feelings of anger and disappointment among my friends and family. There are no excuses, and I take full responsibility for the hurt I have caused. I have apologized to Maria, my children, and my family." Now, when questioned by the paper Monday before Schwarzenegger issued his statement, the former House staffer, now revealed to be Patty, said another man was the child's father. She declined to comment after LA Times notified her of Schwarzenegger's statement. Shriver, on the other hand, who was with Schwarzenegger, announced a couple separation after 25 years of marriage on May 9th. Wow, that is interesting. And then, of course, Newt Gingrich. Now, by the time Newt Gingrich got into the race this week, his first week was an official presidential candidate has been a doozy. He'd been skewered by members of his own party after disparaging the budget plan of Wisconsin's Paul Ryan, branded an embarrassment by a GOP voter in a videotape confrontation that went viral, and showered with confetti at a Minnesota book sign. Now, Newt had a wonderful first week. Obviously, you can tell that. As you can see, it was another eventful week, and I would love to get your comment on any or all of these issues. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-4673. 323-580-5712. Once again, that number is 323-580-5712. Now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to take your calls and, of course, get my co-host, Jima, to weigh in on these and other issues. We will be right back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to open up the phone lines here in just a moment and get our listeners to weigh in. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, that number is 323-580-5712. But first, Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's always a pleasure to get your insight. Now, since this is the beginning of a new era, because obviously the world ended on May 21st, we're gonna have a lot to do here over the next hundreds and hundreds of years. So, what in the world want to make Harold Camping think this was the end of the world?
Well, you know, I'm not real sure what his motivation was. I'm more saddened by the fact of those that profess to be of faith and believe in Christ would take such stock in what he had to say and believe him. You know, that's the more scary part. Not him just saying it, but that there was actually people out there in the world that believed him and was preparing for not to be here today. So that's even more, that saddens me more than his original statements, for sure.
What struck me as odd was the fact that he had so much attraction or publicity around this issue. Normally, if someone comes out and, you know, put up a billboard that says, hey, you know, the world's coming to an end, you know, people can kind of laugh it off. But this thing went viral. So how did it get so popular?
Well, we're in a new world. We're in a new age. Anything can go viral in 2.5 seconds because of, you know, so many ways, the internet and Facebook and Twitter and the television and 24-hour news cycle. And you get one person to see the billboard and they pass it on to somebody else. And they're like, yeah, I saw it in my city too. And next thing you know, you got a whole group of people talking about these billboards that they've seen in their communities, in their cities or whatever. And now you're like, well, now who is this person? The sad part about it, he's done this before. So you would think he wouldn't have as much credibility since the last time he stated, and we're all still here as well. So it's just, I don't know, I guess just the age of information. And it couldn't have been, it was a slow news week because this was a pretty busy news week. So I don't know how he got so much, but boy, I tell you, once it gets on Twitter, it's a wrap.
That is true. So speaking of messages going viral, Obviously, Newt Gingrich entering the race has went pretty viral, and all of the things that he has to endure during his first week. Now, normally it takes people a few weeks to get warmed up in his political campaign, but he got out the gate and had a couple of stutter steps. So what do you think is going on with Newt?
Same problem. The age of 24-hour news cycle, Twitter, Facebook. Newt Gingrich has not really been in public office in an elected position, I don't believe, since the 90s. It's a whole new world now than what it was when he was in last. And I don't think he realized how fast things would go, how fast things could spread, and how quickly people's opinions can be shaped in a click of a stroke on the keyboard. So he learned that lesson the hard way. He had to do a lot of backpedaling this week on things that I think he fundamentally believes in, but realizes that those things aren't going to get him elected. So he has to change course a little bit. But I think it has a lot to do with the fact of the 24-hour news cycle we have and access. You know, information, once it hits one airwave, whatever that is, it's out there, and it's out there for forever. That's the difference. You don't have to search. You don't have to Google too long to find something. You type in a few keywords, and you'll be able to find everything you ever want to know about somebody.
This is true. So how long you think before he drops out the race at this pace?
Well, if he can regroup, and the thing about it is, you know, Newt, for all of his shenanigans, you know, he does have, obviously, he thought, some sort of following. And it's going to be up to his campaign people to really kind of redress him, so to speak, and get him back on track. If he can get back on track, I suspect he'll stay in until everybody else does, and then everybody else starts dropping out. The unfortunate thing is, the Republicans are not, you know, there's not a lot of people out there that's just like jumping at the bit to be president of the United States. You know,
well,
I think a lot of them are going to try to wait till 2016 when it'll be open on both sides, because, you know, as much as they talk, if they have an inkling of what's really going on, there's a lot going on in the world right now. You talked about it probably in jest in terms of all the things that are happening globally. With just our weather and all the catastrophes and all of the earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and waters rising to levels not seen in centuries, and yet you're dealing with an economy that's in the toilet, jobs that they have shipped overseas and they're not bringing back. So who really wants to be president? I mean, I applaud Obama for staying in there, because I'd be like, y'all can have it. when he announced he was going to run again, I was like, for real? You want to do this again? So, you know, but I would say Newt, you know, he's going to try to hold on to his southern roots and stay in there a little bit. So if he doesn't have another week like this one, he'll stay in it. If he has another week like this one anytime soon, he might not make it through the summer. I'd probably give him to the end of the year. So.
You know, if he keeps going on these talk shows and he keeps getting these reporters keep asking him questions, you know, people really don't go for that superficial commentary anymore. You know, comments you may have to have some substance, because they're, you know, you mentioned all of the issues that people are dealing with economically, environmentally, you know, as far as healthcare is concerned, as far as jobs are concerned, you know, all of these are real issues that people are affecting people's everyday lives. So if you come up and make these asinine statements and say, you know, this and that, you know, people are going to hold you accountable for them. And then the reporters are going to kind of push you on those issues. And as you said earlier, when it gets out on Twitter and Facebook, it begins to be viral, and it takes a life of its own. So we talked about dropping out of the race and how long he's going to drop out of the race. And you think at the end of the year, I think it's going to be the end of the summer. But we had a couple of other people that didn't even make it past the end of the world, if you will, May 21st, which was Mike Huckabee and Donald Trump. What happened with those two characters?
Well, I think for Mike Huckabee, it was all about the almighty dollar. He's getting paid some good money to be at Fox, and he doesn't see the need to put himself out there right now. because of it's just not what he wants to do. He can, as he say, be a better servant, doing the, how he's reporting on the news and a part of that process from the outside. I think Donald Trump's issue was, you know, as much as he talked about he's this and he's that, he wasn't ready for prime time. He was not ready to be attacked. He was not ready to be questioned, because you got to remember, when he first started making all these claims about the president, nobody was challenging his thought process. So he went 2 weeks or more unchallenged, just, oh, I know this, and you wouldn't believe what I'm hearing. He was basically given a pass by the media. The media just let him come on TV, and he was everywhere, on every morning show, every evening show. He was everywhere. And mm-hmm. for those first 2 weeks, he was not being challenged on anything. And the moment he started being challenged and there was some pushback, he didn't like what that felt like. He definitely don't want to show us his taxes. So that's why he didn't want to get in there. So he's already not a man of his word, because he said, you know, if the president showed him his birth certificate, he'd show us his tax returns. Well, look who's still standing. So.
Yeah, you know, Donald Trump was basically in it for ratings. And I think he achieved his goal. I mean, it was a short-term goal to get the ratings up. And that's why I thought it was so fitting that when President Obama announced the killing of Osama bin Laden, that he announced it during his show. So, I mean, he kind of rode the president's coattail to get his ratings up. And then at the very moment, which it was really not a whole lot going on, the president interrupts the show, and which was killed his viewing audiences at that time. And the news, and it changed the news cycle, in fact. Changed the entire
Correct.
News cycle. So
yeah.
I just thought that was wonderful. Well, so speaking of the Republican Party, another Republican makes it official this week. Well, he will be Herman Cain. What do you think about this character?
Well, I think Herman Cain, for me right now, I have been listening to him briefly during that debate a couple of weeks ago. Herman Cain has a plethora of sound bites. But what I don't know is what his policies are. His sound bites are all about President Obama. And when you're running for the office of the presidency, you have to have more than sound bites. You have to talk more about not just what the current administration is not doing. You got to tell us a little bit about who you are, especially since we don't know you. There's nothing in your record that I should know in terms of what you've done politically or anything else. So he's going to have to hurry up and explain who he is and put some meat behind all that. If not, he'll just be, you know, someone that we said was there in May but won't be there in December.
You know, as Roland tweeted about him earlier today, or yesterday I think it was, and he talked about him not answering any questions yet with respect to foreign policy. So as you mentioned, he's always attacking the president and for what he's not doing, but he really hasn't laid out his platform about what he's for and what issues and how he would, you know, actually help the situation that we're in now. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, in the coming weeks as he begins to announce his presidency, where he thinks he's going to take the country. Well, what do you think about Pawlenty?
Pawlenty is he's boring. I'm not sure. He doesn't come off as somebody that knows a whole lot, but he probably does. I don't know what his record was in Minnesota. I haven't done my research yet to find out what his record was in Minnesota when he was governor, what he did there, how he left office, if he left with a provable rating or not. Because if your own state didn't like you when you left, I'm pretty sure the rest of the country's not going to like you either. So, but I don't know enough about him. He's kind of quiet and reserved, but yet people say he's smart and that, you know, can you imagine a presidential debate between Pawlenty and President Obama?
Yeah, I could. It would be really, really funny.
Exactly. So it's almost like, wow, he would have to really increase in his delivery not to say that he doesn't have smart answers, but I don't know if I have the stomach to wait for him to get them out and give them to me in such a manner that I can appreciate and digest.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like I said, that's all surface. I haven't done any research yet on him since he hadn't really put his name in. He's supposed to announce that tomorrow. So I hadn't done any research yet to find out anything about, outside the basics, what the conservatives, the Republicans stand for, but, you know, what his tenure was and how things was in the state of Minnesota.
Well, I'm going to go on record and say it again. I said it a couple of weeks ago, and I will say it again today. I really believe that the president will run virtually unopposed for this second term. You know, for 4 years almost, the Republican Party and others have been saying how horrible the president has been doing. For 4 years almost, people have been saying how bad this health care bill, how bad the economy is. But you don't see anybody running to challenge him for this election. Now, granted, it's still early in the cycle, but just remember a few years ago, it had already kicked off by this time. You know, when the election cycle was, you know, and they were already starting to really, really get into it. And I think there's an upcoming Republican debate coming up in the next couple of weeks. And so as we see these things, the Republicans begin to fall by the wayside, it really looks to me like that President Obama will be running virtually unopposed for his second term. And it'd be it'd be interesting to me to see if he really had any competition coming up next fall. So speaking of governor, you talked about Temple Lenny and his governor, and when he left office, he was not really, really liked. Arnold Schwarzenegger was pretty well liked, I think, on for the most part when he was governor. I mean, I think he really left on a pretty good note. But just recently, him and his wife had a pretty interesting situation that happened. What do you think about this love child, as they call it, Radio Online, RadarOnline.com is calling this love child? What do you think about that?
Well, I think we definitely throw the word love around loosely, number one. it was a sad situation when it was announced that they were separating after 25 years. You have to wonder, what happened that all of a sudden now you can no longer stand it? So I felt that there was another shoe that was going to fall, just because you just don't walk away after 25 years. I mean, maybe you do. I don't know. I mean, it just seems if I stayed a quarter of a century, I can probably stay the rest of it. But, you know, depends on what the issue was. So when it came out that, A, he'd had an affair, and then, B, that there was a child that came out of that affair, and then, C, that the child was the exact same age as their younger child, and then, D, that the child was born a week later than Maria's child, it's like, wait a minute. You know, that's just like almost too much to comprehend at one time. However, I think in this age of media, and I put that in air quotes, in the age of media, we have become obsessed with people's personal lives. And it's already a difficult place to be married for that long to then call it quits and then have all these things. They have four other children together. This woman, she did what she did, you know, not like she didn't know he was married, because she did. He did what he did, knowing he was married and had already committed himself to one person. So in that sense, there, you know, it's just out of order. And but then to do with your maid, so to speak, and then to have, it's one thing to have an affair, it's another thing to have evidence of that affair. And whenever there's a child, there's evidence, which means that's a constant to reminder to me as the wife that you cheated on me. You know, and so that has to be for hard. But Maria, you know, she hung in there, went to the Oprah party, and she kicked it. She, you know, she held her own and you know, covered it up as well. I just think it's sad that the little boy has to get involved in all this, because he didn't do nothing. He didn't know that his stepfather wasn't his father. So, and people are acting like that's such a big deal, but, you know, that's a personal story of mine. So, people have kids and have them raised by other people all the time. That's really not a big deal. to some of us. Now, to those in that world, that might be a big deal to them. But to some of us, that's not that big of a deal.
You know, I wonder if Maria, and the reason they went ahead and split this time is that she had seen the signs, or the signs have been there for the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, over and over again. Because recall, during the election, there were times when, you know, they consistently talked about him being a quote-unquote womanizer, or him, you know, touching on people, doing interviews, or behind the scenes harassing people. So it seems like, you know, just by looking at the story, not knowing, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, but that she probably was just fed up. I can't take it, you know, I can't take it anymore. You've done this over and over and over again, and now for the final time you do this? And so it looks like this is one of those fed up moments. What do you think?
Yeah, it could have been a fed up moment. I mean, I think she probably, if the rumor mill is true, where they say the child looks just like him, and if this lady was still in the house for 20 years, she was their maid for 20 years. That's a long time to be employed by one person, anyway, in my world. But for 20 years, she was their housekeeper, and she had a son. The same Maria had her, so I'm sure they talked about baby stuff and all of that. So can you imagine what that would feel like to know now that this woman you shared these things with about your pregnancy, what your baby is doing, and she telling you about, you know, what her baby is doing, that it's your husband's child. So I'm sure at the end of the day, you know, that probably had something to do with it, you know. And Arnold's previous life, but let's be real, Maria knew what she was marrying. I always say that, you know what you got. Everybody knew he was no angel, and he wasn't. She went into that with both eyes wide open in terms of what type of man he was, so she shouldn't have been surprised that he was, you know, she had to defend him while he was on that initial campaign trail when he was first running for governor, when things did start to come out. But, you know, she married him. They made it work for 25 years, and they have 4 beautiful children together. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's the life we live in right now.
Yeah. Speaking of unfortunate situations, it's unfortunate that Dr. Cornel West is saying all of the things that he's saying about President Obama. And up next, we're going to talk about that. We want to ask you, the listening audience, why is Cornel West so mad at the president? We want to hear from you. Be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com. And click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club, or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m., Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Okay, we're going to open up the phone lines and talk a little bit about this Cornel West, President Obama situation. Now, here's the backstory. According to an article on Chris Hedges' blog, Wes says the betrayal occurred on two levels. This is what he said. There is this personal level. I used to call my dear brother Obama every 2 weeks. I said a prayer on the phone for him, especially before the debate. And I never got a call back. And when I ran into him in the state capitol in South Carolina, when I was down there campaigning for him, he was very kind. The first thing he told me was, "Brother West, I feel so bad. I haven't called you back. You've been calling me so much. You've been giving me so much love, so much support, and what have you." And I said, "I know you're busy." But then a month and a half later, I would run into other people on the campaign, and he's calling them all the time. I said, "Wow, this is kind of strange. He doesn't have time, even 2 seconds, to say thank you, or I'm glad you're pulling for me or praying for me, but he's calling these other people." I said, "This is very interesting." And then, as it turns out, with the inauguration, I couldn't get a ticket with my mother and my brother. I said, "This is very strange." We drive into the hotel, and the guys who picks up my bags from the hotel has a ticket to the inauguration. My mom says, "That's something that this dear brother can get a ticket, and you can't get one. Honey, all the work you did for him in Iowa, beginning in Iowa to Ohio, we had to watch the whole inauguration in the hotel." Najima, this is the real reason that Dr. Cornel West is mad at President Obama. He dissed his mom. What do you think?
Come on, you got to admit.
If you start talking about my mama, now he can handle the situation dealing with him when you snuffed him. He talked about on the campaign trail in Hawaii. But his mama had to bring it up to him and says, "You can't even get a ticket to the inauguration."
Okay, so on a small scale, I will agree. I will agree that the issues that Cornel this week, Dr. West this week, has spoken about and the language in which he's used has been very personal. And it's my opinion that is probably why he's received so much of the backlash or the questioning, because it just seemed so personal. Not even knowing that backstory that you just read. At the moment, because I watched an interview he had on Ed Schultz, and when he said those words in terms of calling the president a black mascot and a puppet and how the president is afraid of a free black man, all of that, without even having the backstory, I was like, whoa. This is different than talking about what you don't think the administration is doing around policy and incarceration and jobs. This, you kind of crossed the line. I felt that even before I knew the backstory. So hearing the backstory now, I'm like, wow, really? And here's a man who's a professor and a theologian, studied scripture, studied, you know, the word, and thus knows that we should not hold grudges against people and things of that nature. So I'm just a little bit concerned that his points around the policies will be lost in all the personal attacks. And his points are valid. I don't disagree with him on questioning the president around dealing with mass incarceration rates for blacks and joblessness, and I don't disagree with him on that. I don't disagree with him on the lack of the availability of the presidency to the Congressional Black Caucus. I disagree when you start talking about people and calling them names. That I don't like that. It's just not right. And he made it personal. And if it's because he felt 2 years ago that the president could not even spare one ticket for him and his mother to go to the inauguration, then we really reached an all-time low.
But that's the bottom line, though.
All-time low.
But that's the bottom line. I mean, because Dr. West is a learned man. He's a professor,
right,
you know, of African-American studies, wrote a book on race matters. So he understands his language plays a big part on what drives conversation in the mainstream media when you have reached that pinnacle.
So do you think even for him that he was caught off guard with the access of media today?
No, absolutely not. I mean, he's very calculating too. So this is not something he knew, because the actual the article was preceded the interview. Recall the article that I'm speaking to here was written on Chris Hedges' blog days before he did the Ed show, and the Ed show referred to the comment about the inauguration without giving you the backstory. So Cornell had an opportunity to put it to bed, because he could have defended his position or defended his language, his rhetoric toward the president then. He chose not to. He chose to continue that rhetoric and then add to the feud the word mascot, to add to the feud the language that he did. And if you even take it further back, when he had the conversation with your dear friend Al Sharpton on the Ed show, they had that combative conversation over the air. So he understands, and that took a life of his own. So he had to know that would be how this would play out in the end.
I was just wondering. I agree. I think he's set himself back in terms of his own line of credibility, because he's always spoken highly of not name calling and not attacking the person, but attack people on policy. And he's violated his own rule this week, in my opinion. And during this whole cycle, he's violated the rule that made him credible, that made me want to listen to him. And as I stated, I totally agree with his assessment in terms of what he thinks, you know, where the president has fallen short in terms of addressing issues in the black community. But then my follow-up to that is, if you were to have the ear of the president, what would you say? What would you offer in ways of suggestions? What would, you know, what would be some ideas you would give him right now to address, let's say, incarceration rates? You know, what would be the thing you would say about that? You know, that's my follow-up question to Dr. West. And I think, as we've alluded to in the past, it's also lack of access, because he thought he was going to have a little bit more access than what he does, and that might lead to some of his personal pettiness as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, and not to mention that this access issue is probably worsened now that he's come out to really attack me, because if I'm president of the United States and you keep talking about me like that, you know, I have to take a real hard look at how close I want you to get to me. So it's not just a mere. Go ahead.
And it's not, and I think one of the other areas that he's had a slip in judgment is that he's not only now just attacking the president, but it's funny who he is attacking as well, because when you look at what really started this whole rift, you go back to last year, a year and a half ago, with Tavis Smiley and his group wanting to have a meeting in Chicago to discuss what the president wasn't doing, and they called out a few people, and Reverend Sharpton was one of them. And yet it was during that exact same time that Reverend Sharpton, Mark Morial of National Urban League, and Ben Jealous of NAACP had just scheduled and had a meeting with the president to outline some things they wanted him to take a look at as it relates to the black community. So I find it odd that in this dialogue that we've been having, that there has not been any venom thrown at Mark Morial. There hasn't been any venom thrown at Ben Jealous. But, boy, I tell you, Reverend Sharpton, he's getting it left and right. So I wonder what that's about.
Again,
why is he?
You're talking about who has access, right? I mean, so you looking across me at the table, as I mentioned earlier, to them having a conversation on the air show, Reverend Sharpton got access.
Right.
You know, almost unlimited access. You know, and,
right.
And it's not to say that Reverend Sharpton is not questioning the president on certain issues, because he does. But Reverend Sharpton is also engaged in the fight. So it's not a
right.
matter of you making a critique without action, as opposed to
right.
making a critique. Making a critique with inaction, because
right.
it is interpreted by what Dr. West is saying is that he's making all of these, he used the word critiques, but he's not offering any suggestion. And he, as a professor, as a scholar, knows that you don't bring up a problem without at least suggesting a solution.
Right.
And so when you make a, you put yourself in a situation where you're, A, making a critique without a suggestion, then you're making a personal comment and attacking somebody's character, then, of course, you're going to be, your motives are going to be questioned.
Right. And with the backdrop, and with the backdrop of it all, it just makes it even, it's even more sad, because we really have way too many things to be concerned about in the black community as to whether or not Dr. West's feelings is hurt. And it's, I mean, really, I mean, honestly, that's kind of where I am with it. I mean, it's sad because, once again, we're distracted by from what we really need to be concerned about. We're distracted. The reason why, and they talk about what the president has done with, you know, the gay and lesbian community or the Jewish community or the Hispanic community, and yet, you know, he hasn't done anything, you know, so they can say for the black community. Well, there's two reasons for that. One reason is that for some strange reason, we're the only group that can't agree on what should happen first. Those, I mean, you know, if you talk to, you know, most Hispanics, Latinos, they're concerned about immigration, period. They're not talking about nothing else. They're talking about immigration. They're talking about amnesty. They're talking about making sure that people that have been here and have fought in this country and served this country, that they're given the right to full citizenship. That's all they're talking about. They're not talking about anything else. Two things gay and lesbian communities are talking about: don't ask, don't tell, the military, and the right to marry. That's it. You talk to black people about what's important to black people, we can't even tell you.
You know, and I just hope that, you know, people from African American descent that listen to the show don't get caught up in the fact that our issues are also connected to America's issues. Because the truth be told, is those groups that you mentioned, the gay and lesbian community, the Latino community, the Asian community, you know, the Native American community, they have issues that are associated with them. Those, they are part of America too, but they have issues that they know affect just that community. And so African Americans need to understand that we have issues that affect just our communities. Yeah, we agree. We are a part of this America. We're a part of the dream. We're a part of all these things. But when you look at the data, i.e. incarceration rates, when you look at the data, i.e. the joblessness rates at double what the common in America is, there are that should be giving you, that's evidence that there are specific issues that are associated with African Americans that should be addressed and should not be isolated and not be included into the overall solutions for America. There are some specific black issues, and black people need to know that we need to deal with those issues.
But that's what I'm saying, though. We have yet to agree on what those issues are and which one is top priority. So,
absolutely.
I mean, therein lies, you know, the elephant in the middle of the room, mm-hmm. is that if you were to ask me, what is the number one issue facing black America right now, I would say joblessness. But I would also recognize that the whole job thing is connected to the mass incarceration rate.
And
those
education.
Two are connected.
Absolutely.
And education.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so, you know, we have to figure out, of those top three things, we know that they're all interconnected. So how do we have an impact on one of them, which we know then will have an impact on the other two? To me, that's like a no-brainer, but for some reason, people don't want to see it that way. And when you talk about where we are and what our issues are and how we stand, and let's not get caught up in whether or not what's good for the greater society is good for us as well, but we do have to recognize, and here's the thing that's probably the most upsetting for me in this process, is that we have selective memory and selective recall as it relates to our history in terms of where America has been and where America has come from. Even under Bill Clinton, when the national jobless rate was, unemployment was 4%, the rate in black America was 7-8%.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
We've always had a double of the national average. It just looks worse now because we're in double digits. But let's not play like we've always been in the, you know, we've never, our unemployment rate has always been the same as the national, because it never has been. We've
right.
always had a higher rate. And so we've got to remember that. And so that thing is historical. That thing, it goes back for a long time. And as you stated, it's connected to those three things we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's connected to education. It's connected to the number of mass incarcerations, which we all know increased tremendously under President Clinton. And now you have those young men, those young women who had those three strikes. You got 10 to life, or you coming out in 10, coming out of prison now, and they can't find a job. So are we to say that those people who are now coming out of the penal institution, who can't get regular just any old kind of job because they now have a record, they have a conviction on their record, they have all these things that preclude them from certain types of jobs, that is a huge number.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And until we take a look at that and really look at and really dummy down what does all these numbers really mean? And stop just throwing numbers out there. We have the highest this and we have the highest that. I think I said a couple weeks ago, first they say we have more abortions than anybody as black women. Then they say we have more baby daddies than anybody. And then they say, I mean, well, which study is it? You know, and which one do I take a look at and say, let me see how I can figure out and address this number? Because they're conflicting. And yet it's taking us off of the prize that we have 26 states out of the 50 states that are in their legislative sessions right now that are implementing laws that will have a direct impact on our voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
That is something we need to be talking about. I could care less about whether or not Cornel West ever talks to President Obama again. I need to ensure that the right that I have to vote today, I will have tomorrow. And if I am not sure about that, that's what somebody needs to be on TV talking about. All of this other stuff is irrelevant. That is how we get distracted. Because if you take that 20 million people whose right to vote is in question right now, and they don't have that right to vote anymore, they're now disenfranchised, if they can't vote, we don't have to worry about President Obama, nobody else.
That's right.
Because we won't be able to go vote. So, you know, you want to ask me that's what's important today, because that's what's happening right now. And that is something that right now we can take advantage of and we can have an impact on if we got out and strategized and went to our capitals and sat in on some of those hearings and made our voices known. But we're reactionary people. We wait till it's all said and done, and then we want to respond, as opposed to being on the front end of it and tackling it when it's going down.
All right. I agree 110%. Now, that's our show for today. I just want to remind all our listeners that this summer, Faith Missionary Baptist Church, in conjunction with TaylorMade Training and Consulting, is conducting its first annual summer feeding program. There are three ways that you can help. You can send a donation. Just go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. You can fill out the registration form to volunteer. Or you can always tell others how our program helps feed hungry children. We can always use your prayers. And God is getting ready to do something big. I can feel it. For in Matthew 25, it says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." And then in it says, the king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." That's our show. I want to thank to all our listeners out there for tuning in. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember this written. My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.